are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are, on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. Let's do this thing as the countdown to New Year's is on. 2018 rapidly approaching, which means the college football playoffs are rapidly approaching. They go down Monday afternoon and Monday night. We're fired up for that. Steve Merrill's going to step up and in. We'll talk some college football with Steve Merrill. We'll talk Week 17 NFL football. Final week of play. It's tricky, man. You got to navigate your way through this. We've isolated, I've got about five or six games on this weekend's card that I like in the National Football League. We'll run the gauntlet with Steve Merrill. We'll talk college football. We'll talk NFL football. I've got a DraftKings lineup for you. You know, we did better last year. I can't lie. We made more money playing DraftKings last year than we did this year, and it's crazy. Last week, I had Deion Lewis, man. The guy lit it up. I swear, every week, man, I've isolated a few studs that not a lot of other people have owned, but every damn week, I've also isolated a few piece-of-crap players that gave us nothing. I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I'm the one that took them. You know, it is what it is. I don't know, man. It's like Homer Simpson telling that little the little guy in the episode of The Simpsons at the bowling alley. You know, when Homer got fired, he told little Jimmy, "Don't worry, Jimmy. We'll make it to California one day." Little guy's dying. He's like, "Sure we will, Mr. S. Sure we will." It's like, yeah, one of these days we'll hit. That's what we tell ourselves. All right, so no, all kidding aside, we got a good lineup. We got a good lineup. I'm telling you, isolate a few of my players, you'll kill it. Just figure out which one of my players is totally going to suck. Kenny Golladay, maybe. But nevertheless, we'll get to our DraftKings lineup. We got UFC coming up. Yay, everyone's, I know, really excited about this. Like, really, you know, I'm getting to the point now where it's like, remember when, like, the new... I used to beat these cards. I'll put it that way. Let's just cut... I used to beat these cards. Used to be like, man, I got to beat that New Year's Eve card in Vegas. It's 4th of July card, New Year's card. Those, you know what I mean? It's can't miss. Like, who's fighting on this card? Like, really? What's can't miss? Like, who's exactly can't miss in this? Like, who's the, you know, what, Cyborg? And Holly Holm? That's the main event? Ugh. You know, Carlos Condit's return, all right. Yeah, that's pretty cool right there. But you know what I'm saying. It lacks that sort of oomph, man, that over-the-top punch. But whatever, it is what it is. Doesn't mean we're not going to bet on it. I still like the UFC. I still love the sport. But it's sort of like Monday Night Football is. You know, like the primetime games? You watch them, but you're only watching them because, you know, you're a fan and you're betting on it. Like how many people are like, how many people have you guys planned your big party? Yeah, I'm coming over, man. Got to see Holly Holm and Santos. How many people are doing that? This is a New Year's Eve card, man. It's a freaking pay-per-view. This is what it's come to now where people are like, yawn. Like, you know, UFC really has become boxing. It's pretty crazy. Like, UFC now will have one or two fights a year, one or two cards a year that people actually really care about. And then everything else is just, you know, a fleece job to milk the television networks that they need programming with. Let's just be real. All right, anyways, doesn't mean we can't make some money on this card. All right, so we're going to break that down. Dave Rodriguez is going to step up and I'm a big fan of Dave. Dave's been on an MMA rampage as of late, really like mocking the MMA media. He never mocked me, so we'll bring him on the show. Dave's not a fan of the current state of mixed martial arts right now. Who is? Let's just be real here. Who is? You know, these aren't good times right now for mixed martial arts. The thing I'm most looking forward to is that Bellator heavyweight tournament. And does that make me a bad person? I don't think so. Got a lot of big dudes there, man. It's just such a train wreck. It's so cool. You know? It's just a train wreck. It's good stuff there. So, yeah, Dave Rodriguez, and Dave's out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, so he goes down to Jackson. He knows these guys. So he's got some insight on Holly Holm. He's got some insight on Carlos Condit's return. And clearly, the New England Patriots will have some insight on James Harrison and the Pittsburgh Steelers' game plan in the future. As of course, earlier in the week, James Harrison was released by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Didn't take long. He pops up in Foxborough. Now, is this a surprise to the Pittsburgh Steelers, or should it be a surprise to the Pittsburgh Steelers? I mean, Bill Belichick has done this repeatedly over the years. Doesn't matter if you're the backup long snapper or whether you're James Harrison. You know, if Bill Belichick thinks he can get a little nugget of information out of you, it's worth it for him. That's what, you know, that makes the Patriots the best. We can criticize the Patriots, and I often do. I don't like them. You know, I actually like Belichick better than I like their players and their fans at this point in time, to be honest with you. You know, Belichick's a diabolical genius. He'll do anything, whatever it takes to win, and he thinks of every little thing that other teams don't think of. Now, what happened in Pittsburgh here? I don't know. I mean, you know, James Harrison sort of playing the victim. Marquise Pouncey comes out and says, man, this guy is no victim. Other players are saying that James Harrison used to, like, fall asleep in team meetings, openly mock other players and coaches, and just generally was a pain in the ass and didn't want to be there and used to complain that he wasn't playing, even though he's 40 years old. So, you know, there's two sides to everything. Now, if I'm the Steelers, I would have just put up with James Harrison. I would have just put up with the crap for the remainder of the season, knowing that Bill Belichick would have done this. Now, personally, I don't think teams should be able to sign guys this late in the year. You know, really, there's 1 week left, man. So what, the guy's not even going to play in a regular season game? He's going to play in the playoffs? Like, I mean, we all know. And, you know, James Harrison says, you know what? James Harrison takes offense to this. He thinks he got signed because he's a baller. And, you know, he still can play a little bit. And I bet he will make a damn play against the Pittsburgh Steelers probably in the playoff game. But Harrison goes, you know what? Belichick hasn't brought up the Pittsburgh Steelers once to me. Yeah, because you're playing the Jets this week. You know, we all know. Come on, do you don't think he's going to bring this up to you before you play the Steelers? This is sort of like, it's like the General Flynn, all right? General Flynn isn't cooperating and got a plea deal because he's not going to tell them anything. Sammy the Bull Gravano didn't get, you know, into the witness protection program, but didn't not go to jail for the rest of his life and get executed for killing hundreds of people because he didn't share any information. Bill Belichick didn't sign James Harrison solely because he's a good football player right now. Let's be real. The whole reason you're there, James, is to stick it to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's why you agreed to this. That's why you agreed to this. And, you know, it's funny. Not, you know, the Rams weren't running after you, were they? The Saints were like, oh, man, we got to get James Harrison. I mean, you can fool yourself all you want, James, but we all know down deep inside you're doing this out of spite to get the Pittsburgh Steelers back because you think you've been mistreated somehow. This is the second time he's done this. He signed with the hated Bengals last time he bolted, and they took him back. Now they say, Pouncey goes, this guy's erased his legacy with us. He's not welcome here anymore because of this. I actually see all sides of this, but I see James Harrison's side and the Patriots' side more than anyone else's side in this. Fact of the matter is, James Harrison owes nothing to the Pittsburgh Steelers. In the same fashion that Pittsburgh Steelers owe James Harrison nothing, and in the same fashion that they've let Harrison go in the past, right? You know, if you're with a chick and she leaves you, and then you get back together again and she leaves, and after a couple of times, if you leave the third time, it's not on you. You know, maybe you didn't handle it in the best way, but it's not on you at this point in time. You know what I'm saying? There's like, loyalty is a two-way street. And the fact of the matter is, in the National Football League, there is no freaking loyalty. There's no loyalty with the organizations. They don't give a crap about the players. And the fact of the matter is, it's the same thing at any job that you are in right now. You got to remember, man, you don't work with the company you work for. All right? I don't care where you are right now. You work for the company. You don't work with them. This ain't no partnership. If it was a partnership, the Houston Texans owner wouldn't have called them inmates. All right? Ain't no partnership. They don't have no guaranteed contracts. There ain't nothing owed to anybody when it's all said and done. All you can really do when it's all said and done is, once again, tip your cap to the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick, because they're just clearly one step ahead of the curve. And I don't understand this, and Cam Stewart brought this up, and me and Cam discussed this, and it was a great, great point, is that, you know, football and sports, everyone copies what successful teams do. How come people just don't copy what the New England Patriots do? Nobody does. Oh, Belichick does this. I don't know. Just do what they do. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's bring Steve Merrill in, as we do every Friday, ProSportsInfo.com, one of the covers experts over at Covers.com. Steve's starting to heat up as bowl season starts to heat up right now as well. We've got a lot of big games to hit right now. We'll go rapid fire and blast through as many as we can. Steve, Happy New Year. It's always a pleasure. How you doing? We won't be on Monday, so next time we talk, it'll be next year.
Sounds good. Last time we talked this year, I'll talk to you next year.
Yeah, exactly. One week from now. So we'll have to talk. We'll hit the playoff games in a couple of minutes. But just quickly on this one, probably a game that I spent the least time looking at and talking about, the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. I got to tell you, if you put a lot of money on bowl games like this, you're going to need a home loan because you're going to be broke. The Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl, New Mexico State and Utah State. And you know what? I'll tell you what, it's a battle of Aggies here, Steve. New Mexico State Aggies and the Utah State Aggies. But New Mexico State's offense has been pretty fun to watch this year, actually. We caught on to that pretty early in the season. I think they were playing against Arizona in week two, one or two or whatever it was. And, you know, they went up and down the field, actually. They averaged 29 points a game offensively. You look at the numbers, and these teams are extremely evenly matched, Steve.
Yeah, and the thing you worry about of a team like New Mexico State is they throw the ball for about 75% of their total yards, and they've been off for over a month now. And, you know, one thing I've noticed, Gabe, is that teams often come out slow in the first half, and then they turn it on in the second half. So if you're looking at the overs in games with these pass-heavy teams, the second half over might be the safer play. I'm not even sure the over is worth a look here, though. I think both defenses are actually a little bit better than their numbers indicate. They both played really weak schedules this year. They both averaged about 30 points a game, but they played teams that gave up like 30 a game. So average offensively, but defensively, New Mexico State gave up only 5.4, and Utah State gave up 5.2 yards. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a slow first quarter. Maybe the under in the first quarter would be a good play if you can get a line.
You know, Steve, I'm looking at New Mexico State here, and even I didn't realize that they haven't made a bowl since 1960. They hadn't made a bowl since 1960, man. So you know they're going to be fired up. And, hey, listen, the fact of the matter is it's only a couple-hour drive for them as well. And I see here New Mexico State sold out their allotment of tickets. Wow. You know, they only had 5,000. It's a 275-mile trip. They're expecting 10,000 fans to be in attendance. There ain't going to be 10,000 fans from Utah State at this football game. Even though, you know, it's a border state for them. So the Aggies, they are bringing enthusiasm to the table here.
Yeah, they also had to win their final two games just to become bowl eligible. They went 2-0 down the stretch to go 6-6. Meanwhile, Utah State lost to Air Force in a shootout 38-35. They were already bowl eligible before that loss. So you also got to wonder about the mindset for these two teams.
Yeah, I think it could turn into a track meet here, Steve. I do. You know,
these games normally do, and that's why I was saying if you're going to play the under, like maybe the first quarter under, because New Mexico State's never been to a bowl, like you said, could be a little tight. We get down to the Super Bowl, you know, it's an angle I use a lot in the Super Bowl is the first quarter under, and then they also throw the ball a lot. They've been off for over a month, so you got to wonder about their timing being disrupted early in the game.
All right, so we got some big name teams, and you know what? I like New Mexico in this game, New Mexico State in this game. I'm not overly impressed with Utah State. I think they're going to trade points. I'm going to go with the Aggies from New Mexico and the over. Now, this next game, Steve, I had an early opinion on this game. And anytime I have, like, a really early opinion and the game's getting close, I always start to get cold feet for some reason. So here we are right now. For the last 4 weeks, I've been telling anyone to listen, USC plus 7.5 is a great play against Ohio State. Now the game's approaching. I'm like, it is a dangerous pick. But I'm standing my ground here. You know, Ohio State normally have a big advantage against most teams due to their team speed. They're extremely fast. You won't really have that against USC. Like, Ohio State are so much faster than most Big Ten teams are. We saw Michigan give Ohio State all they can handle with a putrid quarterback situation. You know, I'm not a big Clay Helton fan. He's never really won a big game before. But he won a pretty big game to get here in the Pac-12 championship game. And Ohio State, this just isn't, you know, they're not the same. We're going to kill you on both sides of the football, Ohio State football team. And I don't think they're that enthusiastic to be in the Cotton Bowl. And I know USC are. Yeah, I got to take USC plus the 7.5 here.
Yeah, if you told me these teams were going to play at the beginning of the season, I would have guaranteed it was at least the national semifinal, if not perhaps the national final. These are two teams that would probably, you would have thought that one of them definitely was going to be in the Final Four. And both of them actually were favored to be in the Final Four. The odds came out at the beginning of the season. So you can make a case it's a disappointment for both teams. But obviously USC has known for quite a while they weren't in the national title picture. Ohio State didn't really know until the rankings came out. I mean, they still had a chance after their conference title win. And you can make an argument they probably are one of the four best teams in the country. I can understand why they were left out, but I can also understand why they'd be there. So I think you have to be very careful, more than a touchdown with a team that's obviously not excited about the game. Meanwhile, I think USC probably shows up here, but they also have been tough to back this season. Defensively, they weren't nearly as strong as people expected. Gave up 26.5 a game. Offense very potent, though, and Ohio State put up 42 points a game. And if they're not excited, you got to wonder if that flatness comes on maybe the defensive side of the ball in this one.
Yeah, I don't see how there's not some points in this football game. Sam Darnold's last game as well. You know, USC, there weren't a lot of pressure all year, Steve. You know, Sam Darnold was under a lot of pressure, due to all the Heisman talk and the number one pick in the NFL draft talk. And you can tell he was a little tight around the collar. They lost a lot of talent on the offensive side of the football. They were big, big favorites all the time, and they weren't covering, so there was a lot of negativity about them. But the fact of the matter is they actually had a pretty good year when it was all said and done, Steve. 11-2, they grinded. They played good football down the stretch. They get it done. They win the Pac-12. You know, there's not a lot to really criticize this football team for. They just didn't cover a lot of point spreads.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a team that was 4-9 against the spread, a huge money burner. But like you said, they were basically favored in every game. That's why they went 4-9 against the spread. They won 11 of the 13 straight up, and now they're getting 7.5 points. It's a totally different situation. The one edge on paper that Ohio State has that's pretty substantial is defense edge. They give up 4.4 yards per play. USC gives up 5.7 yards per play. USC gives up over 105 yards more per game defensively. You know, so once again, that's the difference in this one. That's why Ohio State's favored. But as you know, with these bowl games, you have to get motivation, and you have to be very careful and wonder if Ohio State's really excited about this game after the national title chance.
Speaking of motivation, how motivated and excited are Mississippi State going to be? They lose their coach and they lose their quarterback, taking on Lamar Jackson in his final college game.
Yeah, and this is another situation where Louisville obviously was expecting a bigger season than 8-4 straight up. They were just 5-7 against the number. Mississippi State, meanwhile, looked like a sleeper when they blew out LSU early in the year, and then they kind of treaded water after that and lost their season finale against Ole Miss as a 14-point home favorite. Lost outright in that game. You got to wonder if that carries over to this game, if they show up or not.
Yeah, I did this one. I think you're getting 6.5 points with an SEC team. You know, and do you want to lay this with Louisville? That's the question, right?
Yeah, and that Louisville defense is shaky. I mean, you remember what Boston College did to them. They couldn't move the ball all season. They go into Louisville a couple months ago and just put up tons of yards and points. So, I mean, that always sticks out to me. And Louisville was a bad defensive team this year, especially on the road. They gave up 32 points a game at 6.5 yards per play away from home.
Well, Steve, off the top of my head, there's been three games where the coordinators weren't there, or the coaches weren't there, and they all lost. Willie Taggart with Oregon, he called the plays, offense, he was gone. They lost. Chad Morris, SMU, their offense put up over 40 points a game in a regular season. Totally shut down, shut out, and confused without Chad Morris there. We saw Missouri without Josh Heupel, offensive coordinator. They had a tight ends coach calling the plays against Texas. They lose. Interim coaches lose, man. They just do. You know, they lose in bowl games, and it's tough when you lose your coach, or even at times it's tough even when you lose your offensive coordinator and the guy that calls the play, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, SMU and both Missouri were favorites, 3- and 4-point favorites in those games, so it's even more substantial. The SMU game was interesting because they had 6 turnovers in that game, and you could say, well, some of that's random. Then you got to wonder, you know, if your team isn't focused, isn't ready to play, doesn't have that coaching element, maybe 6 turnovers isn't as random as you would normally think.
Yeah, crisp teams don't turn the ball over, exactly. This next game, Steve, we're in a Saturday afternoon slate, and I'll be joining Joe and Rich Sermonello on the television and radio side of things with some best bets, although I will be in a cheap hotel room in Montreal when I do it. Iowa State and Memphis. Iowa State and Memphis. I think the wrong team's favorite here. I think people look at the record and they're like, oh, they're 10-2. But Memphis's defense, Steve, you know, they could have some problems here against Iowa State. Iowa State have been great underdogs. Matt Campbell's a great coach as an underdog. You look at their road record, which bowl games are essentially road games, 5-0-1 against the spread on the road, 4-2 straight up. I think the wrong team's favored here in this game.
think we're getting a bigger conference team, obviously a Big 12 dog. You know, you mentioned getting an SEC dog, and you're getting to hear a Big 12 dog, you know, who beat Oklahoma outright this year as a 31-point underdog.
And TCU.
Finished the year, right. Yeah, and they finished the year not 7-5 straight up, but 10-2 against the number. So obviously they were keeping games close. Even games they lost, they were hanging in there as an underdog with that 10-2 spread record.
Yeah, Memphis give up 33 points a game, Steve, and to a pretty, you know, mediocre schedule as well. For me, I gotta like Iowa State plus the points here.
The other thing that jumps out to me also is Memphis lost that championship game back on December 2nd against Central Florida in overtime. They missed a field goal late to win in regulation as a 7-point dog against undefeated UCF. You got to get a feeling that was a bigger game for Memphis than this one.
All right, this other game, you know, originally I was looking at Fiesta Bowl here. I was looking at Penn State. Joe Lisi made such a strong argument for Washington yesterday. I was like, man, he's making me really think about this. And I am really starting to think about this game right now. What's your take on this one?
This is a tough call. These are probably two of the best teams. Other than that USC-Ohio State game we talked about, I mean, these are probably two best teams not to have made the Final Four, in my opinion. Washington was there last year, got exposed, probably a little bit overrated coming into this season, but still very good on both sides of the ball and really good defensively. Give up just 14.5 points a game on the road and overall this season. So their defense was just as consistent and strong away from home as it was at home this season. And then, of course, Penn State excellent on both sides of the ball as well. This is a tough call here. I mean, these are two teams that look pretty equal, and I think that's why Penn State's only about a 1.5-point favorite.
Yeah, ultimately, though, I think Penn State are just more trustworthy. Browning isn't a trustworthy guy. McSorley makes plays. You've got Saquon Barkley. I think Washington are just a little bit overrated, and Penn State might be a little underrated.
Yeah, I mean, my power ratings right now show that Penn State played a slightly tougher schedule, but Washington actually a slightly better defensive team this year. But the big difference between either side of the ball is Penn State's offense. I would rate about 5 to 7 points better on the season than Washington. Maybe that's the difference, but once again, it's a full month layoff. You just never know how these offenses come out early on.
All right, we got basically a home dog here. There's just a few unique situations when teams are playing at home. And that's what's happening with the Miami Hurricanes on Saturday night against Wisconsin in the Orange Bowl, getting 4.5 points.
Yeah, and this line has dropped. It was as high as 6, 6.5 a few weeks ago. Now it is 4.5, as you mentioned. I definitely could think you could make a case that Wisconsin probably could be a little flat here. I mean, obviously, there's no question that they'd won the game against Ohio State. They're in the Final Four, the national championship picture. It's their only loss of the season. Miami did not expect to beat Clemson as a 12-point underdog. Had they won, they maybe are in the picture as well. So, I mean, you can make a case that both teams could be a little disappointed, but I think it's a bigger disappointment for Wisconsin. And then the fact that Miami is staying at home, basically, I think that helps their motivation. So when you're always worried about motivation, I think you can make some arguments, you know, Wisconsin more likely to be flat in this game, and that's why that line is probably dropping.
Yeah, and Miami, when the season started, they didn't think they were going to be 10-2. They caught fire. They got caught at Pitt. It happened, and they lose to a much better team in Clemson. No shame in that. And, you know, you could tell they were drained at that point. You know, the Virginia Tech game on TV, the Notre Dame game on TV, the turnover chain, the TV hits, just the, you know, they were the it kids, and it caught up to them. But now, Steve, that they've had a month off here again, I think their batteries are going to be recharged again. Playing on their home field, they'll be all fired up. They want to get to 11 wins. You got Mark Richt getting points on a home field against a very pedestrian Badger offense. And the Badgers are 12-1, Steve, but they didn't play anybody. You know, they didn't play anybody. They avoided their schedule was extremely lucky in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, as you say, Wisconsin runs the ball a ton. They average, you know, almost 230 rushing yards a game. It's a typical smash mouth old school Big Ten team, and that whole division was pretty weak this year. And there's no question all the powerhouse teams were in the other half of that conference.
Yeah, they didn't play Ohio State. They didn't play Penn State. They didn't play Michigan State. They played Michigan, and the game was in Wisconsin. And the game was tied, and then they dropped Michigan's quarterback on his head, and he got knocked out of the game, remember, Peters. And then, you know, O'Korn clearly couldn't do it. So, yeah, I think Wisconsin's in tough here. All right, Steve, so let's talk. We can't hit every game here, so let's skip over to the championship game. The playoff games here with Georgia and Oklahoma, these lines are bouncing all over the place. Well, at least the Georgia-Oklahoma one is. It's going up and up, and then it sort of comes down a little bit again. But it's pretty clear that a lot of people out there do like the Georgia Bulldogs in this game.
Well, I think the one thing about both these games is you're getting SEC teams as slight favorites, and the SEC was the best conference this year. I think a lot of other conferences, ACC and Big 12, were down a notch. So I think that's why the SEC teams are favored in these two games. The Georgia game is interesting because it hasn't really hit that key number of three yet. It's hovered anywhere from – actually, yeah, Oklahoma was a slight one-point favorite weeks ago when the line opened, but Georgia's been about a 2 to 2.5 point favorite now. Total has not moved much at all. It's held steady on that 60. And I think we'll see a lot of points in this one. I mean, of the two games, this obviously should be the higher scoring shootout. Both teams could, you know, Georgia at least is a good defensive team, but Oklahoma's defense is the real weakness. We saw that in that Oklahoma State team where the teams just traded points. And if Oklahoma's going to hang in this game, they got to put up points and they got to do something with that offense that averaged 45 points a game and an incredible 8.5 yards per play. I mean, this is a really, really good offensive team in Oklahoma.
Yeah, a lot of people are, I think, just sort of think Oklahoma is. Oklahoma's like past Oklahoma team. So who are you taking? Who do you think goes to the championship game?
Either way, one of these teams is going to be about a 3-point underdog in the finals. You know, and one thing that has jumped out to me over the years in these semis, we've only had about 3 or 4 years of it now, but most of these games aren't close. I mean, they're most double-digit, you know, margins of victory. And it's hard to imagine Alabama would lose by double digits. So I guess, you know, if one team gets blown out, that other game would be Clemson. But this game, I really could see it happening either way because Oklahoma's offense is so explosive. I could see them catching Georgia off guard. But then again, Georgia is a really good defensive team that gives up just 13 points a game. You could see Oklahoma's defense struggling to stop Georgia. But I think if either team blows one out, I think Oklahoma actually could pull the surprise because they just have an explosive offense, more than people realize. This passing attack averages 12 yards per pass. That means on average, every time they throw the ball, they get more than a first down. That's insane.
Yeah, Baker may listen. There's the talk of the Heisman curse. That used to be true. It's sort of a thing of the past, though. To be honest, I said Oklahoma was going to win the national championship. After the last regular season, just to sort of put it out there and be on the record. But I'm buying into Clemson. I think we're going to have an Oklahoma Clemson final. And I think the wrong team's favorite in this Alabama-Clemson game. Alabama's great, but they're not. This isn't the best Alabama team. Clemson have been underappreciated all year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Alabama did this year. It's hard to say they played a weak schedule because they played, you know, probably the toughest division of any conference this year with, you know, LSU, Auburn, those other squads. Played Mississippi State as well. Down the stretch, they had a pretty tough schedule. And I don't give them a pass for the Auburn loss, but I can understand it. And I still think they are one of the four best teams in the country, but they're definitely not unbeatable, and Auburn proved that. Clemson, what an incredible job they've done without Deshaun Watson. I think the last 2 years in the two national final matchups against Alabama, he's accounted for over 80% of their total offensive yards, and he's gone now. This defense is really strong. You know, we talked about Georgia's defense. We talk about Alabama's defense, but Clemson's is just as good. They give up 12.5 points per game this season. Bama gives up 11.5. Bama gives up 4 yards of play. Clemson gives up 4.3. Bama was more explosive offensively, but not by a lot. So I think this is a very even matchup. And now that that line has hit the key number of three, you have to wonder if it's going to go higher to 3.5 by kickoff. At that point, Clemson becomes more appealing.
All right, Steve. So before we get you out of here, final week of NFL play. I know you do the Atlanta and Charlotte hits, and they're playing each other. I think the Panthers are the play that are getting the points. You know, they're just two teams trending in different directions. The Falcons have battled hard, but Panthers still playing for a division title. They're not rolling over in this game. Yeah, they'll be scoreboard watching a bit, but I don't think the Panthers are going to roll over in this game. They want to win a division, and Tampa might give the Saints all they can handle, too.
Yeah, we saw, you know, Carolina really miraculous win last week. They're trailing that game against Tampa, the 10-point home favorite. They score the touchdown, the fumbled snap there late in the game. They find a way to get it done. Carolina, a better defensive team. I think that's the one thing that jumps out at me in this game. They give up only 20 points a game. Falcons only give up 20 points as well. But I just feel like they're not quite as consistent defensively. If you look at the statistics, these teams are pretty even on both sides of the ball. Atlanta's been better offensively overall. That could be the difference in this one. And it is a revenge spot for the Falcons. And they have been a much better team at home. You just got to wonder what they have left in the tank after that bad showing in New Orleans last week.
Yeah, and they might win the game, but not by five, right? And, you're getting 4 points. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they won, you know, 24-23 or something like that by 1 point. All right, Steve, we got to get out of here, buddy. Happy New Year. We'll catch up with you in 2018. Check out Steve online over at coversexperts.com and prosportsinfo.com. Thanks for the time, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us. All right, man, these shows just really freaking fly by. We're going to talk some UFC, UFC 219. And you know what? The card doesn't blow or anything like that, but there's quite a few mismatches on the card. And, you know, the main event, Cyborg and Holly Holm. We got Cyborg nearly a 4-1 favorite in this fight. We're going to send it to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Dave Rodriguez will step up and in coming up next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Marenchero. Let's send it to New Mexico, man, which is one of the MMA meccas. Of course, Team Winklejohn and Jackson, Greg Jackson, MMA. We're going to break it down with a man that's been joining us for quite a few years now on our various MMA programs. He's been on many different platforms, kicking it on Fightbook coming up in 2018. Big things happening over there. Dave Rodriguez steps up. And what's going on, Dave? How you doing?
I'm doing well, Gabe. Always a pleasure to join you, and especially talking to Holly Holm, seemingly talking history whenever she steps in that octagon.
Yeah, I wish we had more time, but, you know, it's bowl season, NFL, and, you know, you got UFC 219 in here. It's a busy weekend of sports. So, you know, speaking of Holly Holm, like you said, the thing with Holly Holm is she, you know, of course, she had that epic win against Ronda Rousey, but she's also looked flat in other big fights in the past. She's 3-3 in the UFC right now. But to me, she really is playing with house money in this fight. But stylistically, how is she going to match up with Justano, Cyborg Santos? What can you tell us from what you've learned being around Holly Holm and being around the camp over the last couple of months? What's Holly's mindset coming into this fight?
I mean, Holly's, you know, this fight is, I think right now, the thing to look at is this fight had to happen now. She had been open to saying, I will fight Cyborg if the opportunity presented itself. It's sort of like a refresh of the 145 division where Holly and Jermaine Durandamy, a lot of people argue that Holly, you know, could have been the champion previously already. So she steps in to fight a Cyborg that's seemingly unbeatable. But similar to the fact that when she fought Ronda, Ronda was definitely the unbeatable then, and Holly's very capable in this fight, Gabe.
Yeah, but I, you know, the thing is, she got, you know, maybe she can get a flash kick to the head or something like that, but she's going to have to get close to do it. And Holly's the older fighter in this one, too. You know, Cyborg feels old. It looks like she's been around forever and she's old and stuff, but she's really not that old, Cyborg Santos.
Yeah, true. And Holly has said previously in previous interviews that she'd like to, you know, possibly be done with the fight game at the age of 36, 37, where she's currently at. But like I said, I think, you know, a lot of people understand that the fight with Durandamy, Holly could have already been the champion. Like you said, she's playing with house money here. She's not afraid. Holly's a gamer. I think she wants the fight to be competed on the feet, and which not many Cyborg's opponents in the past have, you know, taken that opportunity and said, hey, let's go ahead and do this. So Holly shows no fear. She's a true champ, true competitor, and I think this is a fight where, you know, can only propel her to another level, maybe a little bit further than the Ronda Rousey victory that she had a couple of years back.
So you're calling an upset? You're going to say that she's going to knock you, she's going to do it?
I think this fight, Gabe, comes down to, you know, just Winklejohn and Greg Jackson game planning for Cyborg here. I think a lot of her previous opponents, there wasn't a real good game plan to execute. And I think Holly's footwork and her getting in there and executing is going to be very key. The first round will be wild, but I think Holly outpoints her and really makes Cyborg feel her power. And especially that kicking package that, you know, Mike Winklejohn is going to bring to the table, and all about execution for Holly on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, and it'll be interesting to see. Cyborg has never really been in a long fight before, right? I mean, she generally finishes fights in the first 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. There's been a few exceptions where she's gotten deep into the second round. You know, I would imagine, as you stated, that, you know, Holly and the camp want this fight to get extended, drag it out, and see if Cyborg gets frustrated and see if she runs out of energy, actually, as well.
Yeah, and I think part of what Cyborg does well is, you know, she pushes the pace. She's going to come right at Holly. And, you know, when you do that to Holly, that's the fight that, you know, that she wants. It's not going to lie. We're going to see Holly pursue a lot of takedowns here. That's when Holly's at her best. And then Cyborg's wildness and the way she wings punches, Holly's definitely going to have to look out for that. But that's going to give her opportunities. And as the fight goes on, her to time her for possibly something. But it's a big-time fight. Two high-level strikers. It's a big money fight for both. I mean, probably the biggest payday for both here we're looking at, Gabe.
So we've only got about 3 minutes here, Dave. So Carlos Condit, why is Carlos Condit coming back, Dave? Is he coming back because he wants to compete and he feels good, he feels recharged, or is he coming back because he needs money right now? Which one is it?
I think it's a bit of both. But Carlos has said, you know, in previous interviews, I mean, he's a realist. I mean, he said this is a fight to basically gauge where, you know, do I still got it? I mean, he's ranked number 8 in the world currently. So he believes he does. You know, it sort of propels him to another, you know, I mean, the welterweight division right now is just super stacked. So Carlos goes in there and gets a finish over Neil Magny. I mean, you got him matched up against the Tills, the Covingtons, the Perrys. No easy fights there. But Carlos has said, you know, if he's going to be in it and, you know, get past Magny here, we've got to pursue Tyron Woodley and the welterweight title once again.
All right. So we got Barbosa and Khabib. Well, you never know until Khabib's actually in the cage. You know, it's always like, ooh, is he going to make it? Is he going to make it? You know, tough spot for Barbosa to be here in his fight against Khabib, man.
Yeah, I think this is a real interesting fight. It's one of the fights that a lot of people are looking forward to seeing, being as Khabib, not the most active guy, and, you know, unblemished record, was matched up against Ferguson for the belt. So this fight has some title implications, I would assume. Barboza being, you know, the super striker that he is, and able to finish the fight from many different aspects. But Khabib gets a hold of him. It's not going to be a good night for Edson Barboza. I favor Khabib in the fight. I think he can do some damage and make it look good. And then it's Khabib against, you know, possibly Tony. They might rekindle that fire and bring that fight back to the table in 2018.
You know, we got to get out of here, Dave. But there's, you know, looking at, you know, Ngannou and Miocic is going to be good stuff right there. That's a cool fight. But for the most part, I mean, I brought this up earlier in the program, too. The New Year's Eve card is supposed to have that sexy flash. You know what I mean? It's supposed to be, like, over the top. It really isn't over the top, and really in mixed martial arts right now, and I'm looking at future events coming up right now. I'm actually most looking forward to this Bellator heavyweight tournament that's around the corner.
Yeah, that's true. It's sort of could be a dead zone for the UFC in early 2018, but I'm really intrigued by the Stipe and Ngannou fight. I've been high on Ngannou since he stepped on the scene, and I've seen him pursuing this title fight at some point. Now he's got, you know, common opponents with Stipe, devastating knockouts, coming off the Alistair win, super impressive stuff. That's one of the biggest heavyweight title fights there's been in some time post Cain Velasquez era.
And we can't forget about the big Quinton Rampage Jackson Chael Sonnen fight.
Bellator that's tournament is what a great tournament that is, though. I'm really looking forward to
seeing. No, it's pretty cool. Yeah, but the problem is, you know, it's going to be a train wreck because everyone will get hurt, and it never plays out, these tournaments. Rockhold and Whitaker, February 10th. Pretty cool fight as well. Dave, always a pleasure, my man. Happy New Year. Follow Dave on Dave's MMA Brief on Twitter. We have it up on the screen there. Always a pleasure. Dave, check him out over at Fightbook. Thanks for the time, man.
Yes, not a problem, Gabe. Always a pleasure, my friend.
There's Dave Rodriguez from Albuquerque, New Mexico with us. All right, we'll take a quick break. When I come back, I got a DraftKings lineup for you. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Man, this show goes by fast, as do National Football League seasons. I can't believe it's the final week of regular season play, which is always a tricky one, all right? And there's a lot of people out there talking about DFS football this week and talking about, well, this guy's going to get some playing time, and what about, you know, what about this guy and that guy? People are trying to get a little bit too cute, I think. My strategy basically is I'm taking players that I know are playing, and I know we're playing for something, all right? And it's just not automatic that I'm taking them in that spot. But, you know, I need a reason, not just, well, this guy might get some touches and he's pretty cheap. And the fact of the matter is, there are no free passes this week on DraftKings. You know, like Brandon Oliver, the backup running back on San Diego, he's $4,700 bucks. You know, Mahomes, same thing. they're not giving these players away for cheap. I'd rather go with guys that I know are going to produce, or at least I think are going to produce. And let's start off with Russell Wilson. You know, he threw two touchdowns last week in Dallas. Didn't have a massive fantasy game, but it's pretty simple. Seattle need to win this football game. All right, Seattle win and Atlanta lose. They're in the playoffs. Seattle's going to be bringing their A game here. And Russell Wilson's going to do whatever it takes to win this football game. He single-handedly is their offense. He was 22 of 32 last time they played the Cards with a couple of touchdown passes. I'm all in here with Russell Wilson. I was kicking the tires on Phillip Rivers, but ultimately Wilson's going to run, man. You know, their line sucks. Arizona as well. Arizona just got the home win and stuff like that. Now Arizona goes on the road. I think Arizona's going to be in trouble in this game. You know, Seattle's going to put up some points, and it's all going to be because of Russell Wilson. He's going to be my quarterback here. LeSean McCoy, he's not really cheap, but, you know, some of the other guys that are more expensive, I don't fully trust. He's been getting a ton of touches over the last 3 weeks. Over the last three games, guys, 69 carries, 12 targets out of the backfield. He's had 19 or more DraftKings points in three straight football games, all right? Dolphins gave up the fifth most points to running backs, and they actually gave up the fourth most receptions to running backs. This is a good spot. Buffalo Bills need the win. They're going to run the football. Miami's been struggling to stop the run, and Miami's kind of beaten down and tired. Don't forget, Miami didn't get a bye week this year. Neither did Tampa. And they're worn out right now, man. And it's going to be a heavy dose of LeSean McCoy here in the Buffalo Bill finale. All right, everybody's got Jimmy G fever, and I understand why. But people aren't talking about Carlos Hyde. And, you know, it's interesting because since Jimmy G has arrived, Carlos Hyde's numbers have actually gone up a little bit. He's got 68 carries in the last 4 weeks since Jimmy G's been starting. Rams are resting their starters, which actually might not be a good thing because the Rams aren't very good against the run. The Rams starters give up the sixth most fantasy points to the running back position. So I don't know. Maybe like their backups will actually be better. All kidding aside, but you know they are resting their starters, and everyone talks about Jimmy Garoppolo all the time. But Garoppolo doesn't throw the football 50 times a game. Carlos Hyde still gets his touches, and I think Hyde's a good play here at $4,900. I don't think a lot of people, although I know the hipsters are going to be on him, and I considered putting Brissett as my quarterback. T.Y. Hilton, you know, it's been a nightmare season for Hilton. But it's not because, like, Brissett doesn't try to get him the ball. Just things just didn't work out for Hilton this year. But one time it did work out for him when he played against the Houston Texans. Seems to be a common theme this year with people that play against the Houston Texans. You know, he lit the Texans up for 37.5 DK points. He had two touchdowns, 175 yards in week 9. Hauled in six catches last week for 19 points against the Ravens. So, you know, they're trying to get him the football. It's Pagano's last home game. I think the Colts are going to beat the crap out of the Texans and put up some nice offensive numbers. I think Gore actually has a decent game as well. Texans are a train wreck, man. They're giving up 246 yards a game through the air and the sixth most points to wide receivers. Give me T.Y. Hilton at a nice cheap price of $5,900. Doug Baldwin. There's no upside. He's not going to give you 37 points or anything like that, but Russell Wilson doesn't have a lot of reliable targets to throw to. And in big games and in crunch spots, he throws it to Baldwin. You know, Baldwin, he's had 13 or more DK points in three of his last four games. He's had 13 or more in four of his last six. Baldwin's going to give us 13 to 6, 15 points, you know. You plug him in. Would we like a little bit more? Yes. But you never know. I mean, you know, he could get 7-8 catches in this spot. But we'll slide Doug Baldwin in here at $6,400. We're going to roll the dice here with Kenny Golladay. You know, Green Bay Packers secondary is a total mess, man. They're giving up 34 points a game, fantasy points to the wide receiver position. And Golladay, he's got 11 catches and 17 targets in the last 3 weeks, all right? They're throwing him the football. They're taking these shots deep. This is going to be a wide-open football game in which both teams are just going to sort of have fun. And, you know, all it's going to take is a couple of catches to get us back our value here at $3,300 with Golladay. But, look, man, if he gets, for the love of God, if he gets a touchdown or something, he has a big game, which he could. I think Golladay could be that steal this week, guys. I'm praying that he is because, you know, the football gods owe us a damn break. Gronkowski, speaking of breaks, I wanted the Buffalo Bills to break his leg last week, but they didn't, and he lit us up again. Jets gave up the 10 most points to the tight end position. listen, man, I keep leaving Gronkowski on the sideline. He's got 25 or more DK points in three of his last four football games. He had 26 DraftKings points and two touchdowns in week six versus the Jets. Last time they played, you know what to do. You play Rob Gronkowski. Patriots need to win this game to wrap up home field. You know, Kelvin Benjamin. It's too bad Benjamin's been banged up as much as he is, but Benjamin's a big dude, man. Benjamin is a big dude. He's a matchup problem. We saw that last week against the New England Patriots. They really couldn't stop him. At $4,300, I think Benjamin can get us a touchdown here and a couple of catches and definitely give us our value back. You know, Miami, I think, have kind of quit. I'm not expecting Miami really to bring very much on Sunday in this game. Maybe for the first quarter they will, but listen, Buffalo's in a must-win situation. They're going to have to throw the ball a bit at some point. Benjamin's a nice deal here at $4,300. And finally, in closing, we've got to get out of here. Denver Bronco defense, they'll play with pride. Final home game. Mahomes is starting for the Chiefs. Chiefs backups playing on offense. Mahomes is a lot of hype about Mahomes. Mahomes going to have a lot of problems in this game, all right? He's going to get killed. And I'm not saying that Denver kills him because Brock Osweiler's freaking putrid, all right? But Mahomes is not going up and down the field on this Bronco defense. We got $400 remaining right now. Like I said, we were going to go with Brissett maybe, and we also like Phillip Rivers, but ultimately we went with Russell Wilson. We'll be back with our plays of the day. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. The New Mexico State Aggies playing in their first bowl game, man, since 1960 in the Sun Bowl. You think they're going to be fired up? They got 10,000 fans going to the game. It's like the Super Bowl for these guys. Give me the New Mexico State Aggies plus the four against the other Aggies from Utah State. I think it'll be a high-scoring game. Let's go over 63. USC Trojans on Ohio State. Sexy football game right there. Give me the Pac-12 Trojan horse plus 7.5. And let's go over 65 in this football game, in which it should be a track meet. Other than that, you're on your own, mate. The winners be yours.